Okay, good afternoon. We're down to our final session of the day. Some of you will be happy to see the back of me to push you through to the finish line. So the session that we're going to do now is communications and the media. The purpose of this session is to help you work better with the media, to maximize your opportunity and potential. We've had glimpses of this with can't remember what night that was. So Wednesday night with George Abbott, and it was definitely the issue or theme was reinforced last night at the mentors panel. Today, the presenter is Norman Stowe of Pace Group. Pace Group was established 24 years ago and is one of BC's most highly respected communications, media relations, and event firms. With a large roster of clients, including the province of BC, Business Council, British Columbia, City of Surrey, HeliJet, Vancouver Board of Trade, and Union of BC Municipalities. Norman was, prior to creating Pace Group in 1991, was a senior communications executive with the province of BC, where he was responsible for day-to-day marketing, communications, and public affairs of various ministries and Crown corporations. During his time in Victoria, Norman managed most of the government's major public events and openings, including media relations. Today, Norman is one of the most sought-after public relations practitioners in the province and has delivered media training to executives, politicians, and community leaders. Please join me in welcoming Norman.
Thanks very much, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here, and I know the only thing standing between your weekend and you is me. So I'm going to try to make this as enjoyable and fun and interactive as we possibly can. It's a pleasure to be here, and just to get a quick sampling, how many of you are first-time elected folks? Great, so majority of you. How many of you are second, third term? Great, okay. Well, the media, for those of you that have just joined the ranks of politicians, the media are going to play a big, big role over the next 4 years in your life. And today we're going to teach you a few things on how to deal with them, how to work with them, and also primarily not to be afraid of them. I know that's often the media are often a curse that seems to come with the job. And there's reality is there's no point in complaining about it. In terms of the media and politicians, it's like a ship's captain complaining about the water. It doesn't make any sense. They are a part of your life. They're going to be a big part of your life for the next 4 years. So learn to work with them. Learn to work with them carefully. And, you know, don't be afraid of them. I think that's one of the big things that are part of the takeaways here. In fact, there really are only two takeaways here. Number one, don't be afraid of the media. And number two, practice, 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 and then practice again. The media are not necessarily always fair, as President Johnson once said. You know, if he walked on the Potomac River to the other side from the White House, the media would basically say the president can't swim. So we know they're not necessarily always fair, but you as politicians are fair game. You put your name on the ballot, you got elected, and with that election comes a target, right about here. And so learn to work with that and learn to take advantage of it as newly elected mayors and councillors. The other thing you don't want to do when you're dealing with the media is unnecessarily pick fights with them. As Mark Twain said, there's no point in picking a fight with people who buy their ink by the barrel. You may win on a single day. You may win on a single issue, but the reality is they're going to be there 24/7 for 365 days for the next 4 years. The last people you want to be in their bad books with are the media. And that doesn't mean you have to kowtow to them. It doesn't mean you have to be afraid of them. You have to be respectful. You have to be responsible. You have to be professional. But you don't deliberately go out of your way to pick a fight with the media. I don't care whether you come from a small community that has one little newspaper that publishes once a week, or whether you live in Vancouver or Surrey and you've got lots of media. just don't arbitrarily pick a fight with them. It's not worth it. Because you've got 4 years to go, and the last thing you want to do is have the media working against you every single day. Where do people get their news these days? Where do you get your news? How many people get most of their news from television? Radio? Print? Internet? Here's how you stack up against everybody else. TV is still the most dominant place to get your basic news. Most British Columbians, about 80% claim in the polls to get most of their news still from television, mainstream media. Online is next, and catching up. And online is growing in popularity because it means you can go anywhere on the internet to get the information you want. So if you're a left-wing fanatic, you can find something on the media that satisfies you. If you're right of Attila the Hun, you can find something that's going to satisfy you. So online is going to grow and grow and grow. Radio and print, again, people are still using it, but in less lower amounts. Who covers the news best? Who tells stories the best in terms of the media? The public believe that the best and most accurate news comes from the internet, followed by television, newspapers, and radio. And it's not that they don't trust radio. It's that radio only works in 40-second increments. The average radio story is about 40 seconds long and has about an 8-second voice clip in there. And so it's not a lot of information. And so while people trust it, they don't necessarily think it provides the whole spectrum of news for a particular story. But it's instant, it's quick, it's easily accessible, but it's in very short amounts. So what stories do the media like to cover, you know, and how do you appeal to them? Well, there's really three areas that the media are interested in: health and well-being, safety and security, and finances. And the reality, as mayors and city councilors, you touch all three of those. So you can expect the media to be interested in what you're doing every single week. Here's where you rank as politicians in the least trusted survey. You fall somewhere between psychics and bloggers. But you are below car salesmen and telemarketers. But we do trust actors and lawyers more, which is, you know, that says something about you guys. So there you come automatically with to the media and the public with a reputation that you personally might not deserve. But as a profession, that's how you're viewed by the public. So you are sort of climbing out of a hole once you're elected in terms of public opinion and media relations. It's amazing how on election night, everybody loves you. The next day, half the population hates your guts and the other half think you walk on water. So what do you do when the media come calling? There's a couple of things here that you need to bear in mind and what you want to be aware of, but there's a very good example here of what you don't want to happen, and we're going to talk about it as soon as you see this clip.
What can you tell us about
Can you get off my property, please?
Thank you.
We're off your property.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about your investment.
What don't you understand? Get off the property,
partner.
Get off. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Are you the focus of the drug investigation related to Sandra Lisi, Mr. Mayor?
Thank you.
What will you tell us about the
Thank you.
Today?
Thank you.
Don't get run over, guys.
Now watch out, guys.
Okay. Bit of a debacle. Who's at fault there? How many people think the media were at fault in that case? How many people think Rob Ford was at fault? I agree. Rob Ford, in my opinion, was at fault. Over the last 30 years, I've had the chance to work with all kinds of politicians, federal, provincial, municipal. And I can tell you right now, people that I've worked with, like Bill Bennett, Grace McCarthy, Diane Watts, Philip Owen in Vancouver, Art Phillips in Vancouver. The media would never, ever, ever think to behave like that with those politicians. And there's a good reason for that. From the minute that those people stepped on the public stage, they behaved in a certain way. They were respectful, they were responsible, they were professional, they had dignity and decorum, and they didn't lie. Not that I know of. Rob Ford created a persona around himself that basically said to the media, it's okay to behave like this. And so they took advantage of it. And it haunted him all the way through his days in the mayor's office. And it was compounded by the fact that he got into more and more trouble and said stupid things and became a laughingstock across North America. You have exactly the same opportunity. You've just started. You get to define your brand with the media and with the public. If you behave in a certain way, the media will treat you in a certain way. And the same way that they would never behave like this with a Bill Bennett or Grace McCarthy or Diane Watts, that's what you want as a professional politician and community leader. So don't give the media the opportunity to turn you into this. Don't give the media the opportunity to define your brand. You get to do that, and you get to do it from the first day that you show up at City Hall. Oh, let me go back here. How do you keep control of an interview? Well, you start by creating key messages. And in our world, in my world, basically three key messages is about all you can do. And I don't mean that because you're trying to take advantage of the media or control the story. It's just practical. First off, I don't think the average person can remember more than three things at one time. Second, the average television story is 2 minutes long, 120 seconds. Radio is 40 seconds long. A newspaper story is between 500 and 750 words. And just to put that in perspective, on a sheet of paper, you can put 250 words. So the average story is two or three pages long at the most. So they don't have a lot of time and they don't have a lot of space. So they show up at your doorstep and you do an interview and you give them all this great information, tons and tons of stuff that you think they should know. They go back to the studio, and we'll use television as an example here. They go back to the edit bay at Global Television, and John Daly, the senior reporter there, sits down and starts putting his story together. He's got 2 minutes, and in the course of those 2 minutes, he's probably got three talking head 8 to 12 second clips that he has to insert there. And he's got to do all that in 2 minutes. And in television, they fight over seconds, reporters, with their editors. So you've given them all this information. 6 o'clock comes on, you sit in your chair, you're watching Global Television, and you go apoplectic. I spent 15 minutes with John Daly. I gave him 10 great things for this story. Those are the three things he used? Those aren't the most important three things. These are the most important three things. Well, if they're the most important three things, that's all you give him. Not because you're trying to shortchange him, but because you know now that the average story is 2 minutes long, and if I give them too much information, it's going to end up on the edit floor of the Global Television. So it's really about understanding the media, including smaller media. You know, most media today don't have enough staff, they don't have enough money, and they don't have enough time. In Vancouver, the average radio reporter is doing somewhere between 5 and 8 stories a day. They're literally all over Hell's Half Acre. 20 years ago, reporters would graduate, they would go into community media, they'd work their way up to the top. When they got to the top, they'd spend 5 years at the police station, 5 years at the courts, 5 years at City Hall, and they'd be beat reporters. They'd be terrific at it. They would develop. Now they're coming out of Ryerson, they're coming out of UBC, they're coming out of Capilano, the journalism schools, and they're literally going on air with not a lot of practical experience and not a lot of background or historical knowledge of your community or our province or our country. They're relatively young. They're underpaid, by the way. They do it because they like to be in the media. If they're on television, they love seeing themselves on TV. They like that kind of work. And that's the offset. They get that profile, but they don't get the pay. So You don't have the old seasoned reporters anymore. You look at your average television station and watch you're watching the age of the reporters go younger and younger and younger. Because the other ones, the older ones, are too expensive. So media don't have a lot of time, they don't have a lot of resources, they don't have a lot of people. And so they're tight in the same way that all of us are struggling with budgets. They're no different. So when you're doing that interview, try to bear in mind this person only has a certain amount of time or a certain amount of space, and if I give them three important things to talk about, that's probably more than enough. The second thing is staying on message, and we're going to talk about bridging near the end here. But basically, bridging is the technique of going from this question to this answer. Not ignoring the question, but acknowledging it in a way that isn't offensive or makes you come off like a jerk, but knowing that I've only got a few minutes here to talk about what I want to talk about, and this isn't what I want to talk about. So how do I finesse that? How do I go from here to here without looking like a jerk on TV or radio or whatever? The other thing that's important here is understanding that when you're doing an interview, there's a couple of things that happen with reporters and, say, radio talk show hosts. I spent my whole life working with Bill Good at CKNW before he retired there. And Bill had a bit of a technique. You'd be sitting across from him. You'd each have your own microphone. You'd had your headsets on. And Bill would talk to you. And in the course of giving your answer, giving your three key messages, his body language, he'd lean forward and he'd nod his head and, you know, he'd give you all the body language signs that say, this is really interesting. You know, I'm really interested. Keep talking here. You'd finish your three key messages. You'd sort of look at this bodily cues that he's giving you. And he's not talking. He's not saying anything. But all the body language is, I'm enjoying this. It's interesting. Keep going. You finish your three key messages, and you're thinking, well, I'm done. We can't have dead airspace. It's live radio. He looks like he's interested. I'm getting all these cues to keep going. I can't talk about those three things. I've already talked about those. Maybe I'll talk about this. No. That is not your cue to keep talking. That is your cue to shut your big fat mouth. And I'm not even being subtle about that. If you want to keep talking, go back to your three key messages. You can reword them, put them in whatever order you want. But it's a great technique because as nice, polite Canadians, we don't want to have dead airspace. And dead airspace, you know, 2 seconds of dead airspace, it feels like an eternity. Number one, it's not your show, it's his show. Number two, you're not responsible for the questions. You're only responsible for the answers. Go home tonight and watch television. Look at those TV clips. Someone is you'll watch a clip and you'll see somebody come on and they'll say a few words and they'll have 5 or 10 or 15 seconds. You have no idea what question was asked by the reporter to get that answer. The questions don't count. Only the answers count. Henry Kissinger, when he was Secretary of State, used to go down to the State Department briefing room with the media every single day, and he'd start off with exactly the same line. Does anybody here have any questions for the answers I've prepared? He knew what he was coming to talk about, and he wasn't going to talk about anything else. And that's something you have to learn. You're not standing in front of the media like deer in the headlights. Everything that you do with the media can be negotiated, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I can guarantee that if you decide what it is you want to talk about, and you talk about it, and if you repeat it again and again and again, and you can change up the odd words or whatever, the reality is, if you say it, they can use it. So just be careful what you say. And remember, there's a lot of stuff on the edit room floor at Global that a lot of people thought was going to make it into a story, but now you know. They have 2 minutes, 40 seconds for radio, and 500 to 750 words for newspaper. And the questions don't show up. Only the answers show up. And that's where you come in. The third thing we want you to remember about interviews, don't guess. Don't ever guess. And it's hard to do, and particularly for television. The camera's going, somebody asks you a question, and you think, holy smokes, I'm the new counselor, I'm on the Economic Development Committee, I should know that, and oh, geez, it's television, I'm going to look like an idiot, and I think the answer's 5, or is it 10? I think it's 10. I'll go with 10.
Boom.
10 comes out of your mouth. I guarantee that 50% of the time that you guess, you will be wrong. Now somebody has to clean up the mess. You go from the interview back to City Hall. You poke your head in at the city manager and say, hey, I just did this interview, and you know, I said the answer was 10. And the poor guy goes, 10? It's 5. Now somebody has to pick up the pieces and clean that up. In the old days, 20 years ago, news was on the hour. Today, it's real time. It's instant. At the very least, it's every 15 minutes on, say, CKWX or CKNW or CBC. So by the time you get back to City Hall, by the time you check with the city manager, by the time somebody picks up the phone and calls the news desk at CKNW or WX or CBC or whatever, by the time you track down that reporter who's running around the lower mainland or wherever, that story, that 10, will be on 4, 6, 8, 12 times. The damage is already done. The media have enough issues of their own. They have their own things to clean up. They don't like cleaning up your messes. So if you don't know the answer to something, do not guess. Well, but Norm, they're going to think I'm an idiot. No, they're not going to think you're an idiot. It's not going to happen. If you don't know the answer to something, just let them know, I don't have that answer. Let me get it for you before the interview's over. And as long as you do that, they're not going to take issue with you. I guarantee it. They're not going to, you know, put you on television looking like a knob or anything. It's not going to happen. They're not interested in that. But as long as you do commit to giving them the right information and you do get it to them, they'll be fine with that. So please, don't guess. So get your three answers together. Don't guess. Be prepared. And that's what this is all about. Getting ready for your interview. Everything is negotiable. I think a lot of people, particularly newbies into politics, think you sort of just have to stand there and take it. Let them go at you. You just have to stand there and take it. No. They phone you. You can have a quick conversation. What would you like to know? You know, what's the crux of the story? What information should I be bringing? And just because you want to help them do a better story, and you also want to help yourself. And it's not unfair to sort of negotiate some of those things. Where were you doing the interview? Am I standing in front of a waterfall? Am I standing in front of a building? Where are we doing this kind of stuff? And remember, television is all about pictures. It's mostly pictures. Television without pictures is called radio. So, you know, it just bear that kind of stuff in mind. Think a little bit about who you're talking to. Every single television station, every single radio station, and every newspaper in the lower mainland or major communities where you live and work, they're all a little bit different. Every reporter is a little bit different. So I think it is worth your while to go online and sort of scout these people down. Look at what they've written before. Look at their blogs, look at their tweets, because that will tell you a lot about what's on their mind, what they think is important, what style of writing they do. You're going to be working with these people for 4 years. So spending 15 or 20 minutes to get to sort of know their style and their interest and how they behave is worthwhile. So, you know, get ready for your three key messages. And here's a tip about practicing. As I said, there's only two things to take away. Don't be afraid, and second, practice. Practice. When one of my clients says to me, oh, don't worry about it, I'll just wing it. No. There's no winging. There's no freelancing. There's nothing ad hoc. You've got 2 minutes on television, 40 seconds on radio, or 500 words in the newspaper to get across what it is you want to say, what's important to you. Think about that. You're a billboard for your community or a particular policy. You've got 2 minutes on television. You're not going to wing it. When a reporter gets an assignment at Global Television, they get in the van, and the driver is typically the camera guy, who is just as much of a journalist as any reporter. So they're driving from Burnaby out in Enterprise Road, where the studio is, to the Radisson Hotel to interview you. It's about a 35-minute trip. What do you think those two are doing in that van? They're talking about that story. And that reporter in the passenger seat is practicing his stand-up, his introduction. And his best critic, the camera guy, is saying, well, no, try it this way. Do it this way. No, do it differently. Do this. So he's practicing. This is somebody who does it for a living every single day. If those guys are practicing, what makes you think, as amateurs, those of us in this room, can get away with winging it? You can't wing it. So you got to practice. And here's, to me, the best way of practicing. Number one, you have to practice out loud. You can't just ask a question in your head and think of the answer and hope that works. No, you have to say the words. You have to feel the words coming out of your mouth. And one of the best and easiest ways to practice is when you're driving. I don't know how far your city hall is from your home or your office or whatever it is, but here's what happens. You get in the car, you know you're doing an interview, you sort of know what the questions are, what's important in that interview. So you ask yourself a couple of questions. And the first time you answer that question in the car out loud, the answer will be this big, just because you're trying to dump everything you know into that answer. Ask it a second and a third time, and just by osmosis, the answer will get shorter and shorter and shorter. And what you're doing is you're cutting away all the crap. You're getting rid of all the junk that isn't important to that answer. Try this and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And by the time you've asked yourself that question three or four times and you've answered it out loud in the car, you'll be down to something that's manageable and useful, and you'll be able to use it when you do the real interview. So practice, practice, practice. It's absolutely key. There's no such thing as winging an interview. They're too important. Take advantage of that. Recognize the 2 minutes, the 40 seconds, and the 500 words. But practice is, if you take away nothing else, it's that whole business of practicing. When you get home at night, we want you to do something. We want you to watch the 6 o'clock news or listen to the radio or read the newspaper. If you've done what we've asked you to do, practice, focus on 3 key messages, learn to bridge from that question to the answer that you really want to give, the subject you want to talk about. If you do all of that, you're not going to be surprised by what you see in the newspaper or listen to on the radio or watch on TV. You won't be surprised. You might not like the whole story because you don't control everybody else's interview. You only control your own. But if you've done what I've talked about, you're not going to be surprised. Yep, that's what I said. That's what I meant. I'm good with that. I don't control these other two people who might be opposed to something or whatever, but I've done what I needed to do. You know, when I talk to our clients and so on, one of the things that we get, and I come in to, let me just back up here. I come into work every day at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm in my office at 4 o'clock every morning, 6 days a week. And early in the morning, sometimes we'll get phone calls from clients who, and the conversation sort of goes like this. Have you seen the Vancouver Sun? Yes. Have you seen the front page? Yes. Have you seen the headline? Yep. I didn't say that. And you talk to the client a little bit longer and you realize, and you ask a few questions, you realize, okay, I said it, but I didn't mean it like that. If you say it, they can use it. They can't make it up. That's illegal. They get in trouble for that. But if you say it, they can use it. It's not their job to interpret or edit what you meant to say. If you said it, they can use it. So if you don't want to see it on the front page of the Surrey Leader or the Vancouver Sun or the Kelowna News or whatever, don't say it. And that's part of what this exercise is all about, learning to be disciplined enough with the media that you're comfortable at the end of the interview with what you delivered. So we're asking you to talk in sound bites, and I don't mean talk like a machine gun. It means that in the course of whatever interview you're doing, there's going to be a set of words and phrases in there, and the little hairs on the back of your neck will stick up when you do this, and you'll get good at it over the next 3-4 years, is that you'll start to realize certain things are just too good not to be quoted. You'll hear yourself, and you'll slowly get it. The more interviews you do, the better you'll get at this. The more you do it, the better you'll get, the more you'll understand that there are certain phrases or comments inside a longer answer that the media are going to pluck out and use that night. and you'll get good at it. I guarantee you will. The more interviews you do, you'll start to not talk in, you know, machine gun type staccato, words and phrases, but you'll learn to insert important messaging inside longer sentences that they will pull out. If there's anything that will stop a media person in their tracks from going down a particular line of questioning, it's enthusiasm. An enthusiastic answer will often stop a reporter from going down a line of questioning that you don't want to go to. And I'll give you a quick example. A few years ago, we got a call from the chief judge of the provincial court. So this is the judge responsible for all the provincial court judges in the province. His name was Bob Metzger. He started his career up in Prince George, and he came down to Vancouver, became chief judge of the provincial court, later went on to the Supreme Court. And he wasn't a regular judge. I mean, the guy had tattoos. So he was not your standard judge. But he phoned me one day, and he said, I want you to come over for a few minutes. So I went over to the chief judge's office in downtown Vancouver. And he said, I want to show you the media relations approach of the Provincial Court of British Columbia. And he had a stack of those pink telephone messages in those days. And he grabbed them, he scrunched them up, and he threw them in the garbage. And he said, that's what we've been doing as judges for 100 years, and we have to stop. We have to get out there and talk to the media. And so we did some media training, and he was just a natural at it. He was good. He was interesting. He liked to listen to people. So he was good. He was a good guy. A few months after we do all of this, there is a judge in Vancouver, Judge Cronin at the time, working at the Quebec Street Courthouse. And Judge Cronin had a drinking problem. He would go for lunch, drink too much, fall asleep on the bench. And if you're a Crown Counsel and you're a defense attorney, it's awkward. You know, hello, judge, wake up. It's not your courtroom, it's his courtroom. So it became very awkward. Judge Metzger finds out about this, pulls the judge aside and says, look, you can't go back to work until you sort this out and you get some help and fix your problem. Months later, the media realize in the courtroom there's Judge Cronin again. And they just make a beeline for the chief judge. There he is. He's in court. Are you, you know, is he okay? Can he do the job? Is he? And without batting an eye, with nothing in his voice except enthusiasm, all Judge Metzger says is, he wouldn't be there if I didn't think he could do the job. That was it. End of story. No other questions. The story went nowhere. Never went into the news. Nothing happened. We use that as a little training exercise with the number two judge when we're doing some media training, and we use the question of Judge Cronin. And Judge Schmidt, Dennis Schmidt at the time, and Dennis, we ask him the question about, oh, we noticed Judge Cronin's back, and blah. Dennis paused for about a nanosecond before he answered the question, and he tried to answer it the same way that Judge Metzger did. But there was just enough of a pause in his voice that a good reporter who's got great BS antenna would go, this guy isn't comfortable with that answer. And so we said to him, you know, Judge Schmidt, you paused there. Are you not really sure that the judge should be back on the bench? The poor Dennis didn't know what to do. And the interview spiraled downward. And what he had done is he had opened the door of doubt just far enough that a reporter could stick their big size 12 shoe in there and open it up even further. But you can see the difference. An enthusiastic answer in that case, just shut it right down. A not-so-enthusiastic answer had the media asking for more, and the story sort of got out of control. We want you to use good word pictures when you're talking to the media. Most people get most of their news from television, and television is pictures. So pictures and props are a big part of the media. What can I take a picture of? How can I tell this story, whether it's the newspaper, you know, taking a shot or television? One of our clients for about 20 years or so, YVR, the Airport Authority. And everybody in the media loves Vancouver International Airport. It's a great place to go and get pictures. There's lots of action, lots of people. There's more hugging and kissing at YVR per square inch than any place in the province. It's just a great place to go and do a story if you're the media. Lots of stuff happening. So the airport decides one day that it's going to bring the media down and show them the busiest day of the year at YVR. typically sometime in the middle of August. You've got all the summer traffic, and when you add four or five cruise ships down at Canada Place, you're adding another 12, 15,000 people. So your numbers are getting up there. So they can narrow the window down to just a couple of hours. They know what the busiest day and time of the year is. So the media come down, they're enthusiastic. It's a debacle. It's a disaster. There's too many people. The lineups are long. People are cranky. It's not going well. Air Canada is more unhelpful than usual. It's just miserable. It's awful. So that didn't go so well. So the airport spends a whole year fixing up all the technical things to getting people through the airport. But one of the things they found was that when you get up to the check-in counter, if you don't have in your hand your passport, your U.S. Customs declaration, and your ticket like this, and you're fumbling around in your purse and your wallet and your bag and your briefcase looking for those things when you get to the counter, and you add even just 10, 12 seconds to a transaction, multiply that by 50,000 people, and you can see why the lineups are so long. So the next year, we do the same thing. We invite the media out, but we do a little something in advance. We invite them to come a day early, before the busiest day. And we bring down the woman who's the director of airport operations, and she comes down and she says to the media, look, tomorrow's going to be the busiest day at the airport, and if people want to help themselves and help us, here's a little tip, real simple. And she pulls out from her breast pocket on her jacket, ticket, passport, customs declaration. Have these things when you get to the counter, because if you do that, it's going to go faster, and even if you just add 10 or 12 seconds to the transaction, blah, blah, blah. She's not saying anything to the media about go do this, go do that. But subtly, what she's saying to each of the camera guys is, you might want to go up and down the lineup and find people who are doing this and not doing it just to prove the point. And that's exactly what they did. She was real subtle about it. Just she gave them good word images to help convey the message that she wanted to deliver. And, of course, the camera guys go out there and they start shooting people fumbling around or people that have got it and sail right through to make the point. So if you can, think about the visuals. Think about the props. Think about the good word pictures that help tell your story. It's important to stay on message, but there is a fine line between staying on message and being a buffoon. And here's Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense at the United States.
Now, what is the message there? The message is that there are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things that we now know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we do not know, we don't know. So when we do the best we can, and we pull all this information together, and we then say, well, that's basically what we see as the situation. That is really only the known knowns and the known unknowns.
So was that perfectly clear to everybody? Did you get that? If I turned the sound up to its loudest, you would hear the media in that briefing room laughing. Just because it got ridiculous. It was just, and this thing got repeated on YouTube and just over and over and over. It was just completely ridiculous. So yeah, stay on message, but don't go overboard. When the interview is over, couple of things we want you to do. First, if you promise to get them information, get it to them. Second, go home and watch the news. Third, be critical. You know, try to watch it with somebody who isn't involved at City Hall, who isn't a fellow counselor or the city manager or whatever, just somebody who happens to be watching the news, whether it's your spouse or your kids or your neighbors, and ask them a few questions. Did you understand that? Would you believe that person? Did you believe that person? Did you learn anything? This is how you're going to get better at this, not just drinking your own bathwater thinking you did a great job, but there's an audience. There's 500,000 people watching global television. They're not all like you. They're not all city councilors or mayors or city bureaucrats. They're just regular folks. They don't know anything until you tell them. So be tough on yourself. Get people to critique your work, and you'll get better. I guarantee that if you do the things we're talking about today, 4 years from now, when you're going in for re-election, you're going to be better dealing with the media than you are today. It's inevitable, as long as you do the things that we're talking about. How do you look when you're doing an interview? We want you to look the part. That doesn't mean you have to dress up or dress down. You just have to look the part. And everybody today is a little more casual than they were 20 or 30 years ago. But still, you know, one of the key things we want you to remember is that the public, when they're watching television, they have the attention span of a gnat. And anything that they see on that screen that doesn't sort of fit with whatever else is going on, that's where their eye goes, and that's where their attention goes. How many people here watch global television? Okay, do you remember a few years ago when Pamela Martin was one of the anchors at Global before she went to CTV? One night, Pamela shows up to work, and she has changed her hairstyle after years and years. She's changed her hairstyle. So there's 500,000 people watching global television, and nobody's paying attention to what she's talking about. She could be talking about World War III, the second coming of Christ, the cure for cancer. Nobody's paying attention. 500,000 British Columbians are sitting on their couches. Do you see that? Do you like that? That doesn't look good on her. No, I like it. I think it's... Nobody is paying attention to what the woman is talking about. And every media station keeps a list of telephone calls after the news. They keep a roster of people who phone in. I like that story. I didn't like that story. That reporter was mean. That was unfair. You know, the night that Pamela Martin changed her hairstyle was the night that global television got more phone calls than any other night in its history. So are we shallow and lazy as viewers? Yes, we are. We have the attention span of a gnat. So when I say look the part, basically what I'm saying, if you want to color your hair green, fill your boots. Do it the day after the interview. You want to put the mark of the devil on your forehead, tattoo it on there, 666? Go ahead, the day after the interview. Don't do anything, don't wear anything that's going to detract from what it is you're talking about. You don't want your earrings or your neon tie or, you know, whatever it is, your too much makeup, too much glitter, whatever it is. You don't want people focusing on what's not important. What's important is the message. So wear what's appropriate, look professional, but just be careful about what you're looking like. I used to work in the provincial government years ago. And we had a wolf problem in northern British Columbia. And the ranchers up there were quite ticked off. The wolves would come out of the bush and they'd go and eat the cows. And apparently they don't just go for the jugular. They start at the back and work their way to the front. And so these cows who were being eaten were sort of hobbling along for days sometimes as these animals were attacking them. So if you're a rancher, you want to get rid of this vermin, this problem that you've got. And so the chief biologist of the province of British Columbia would go up in a helicopter with a high-powered rifle, and he would selectively pick off wolves from packs to cull the packs of wolves up there. If you were a rancher in northern or central British Columbia, you were okay with that. That was okay. If you were somebody living in Vancouver or Victoria, you were going ballistic. How could the government kill these beautiful animals? Blah, blah, blah. People were bringing wild wolf pets into the parliament buildings to protest. It was out of hand. And it didn't matter what the minister or the deputy said. Nobody believed them. So we figured we better send for the chief biologist himself and get him down to Victoria and explain why he does this. Because this is somebody who went to school to care for animals. He loves these things. He's a wilderness person. He's a scientist. He's doing it for what he considers to be all the right reasons. Let's get him down here. So I go out to the airport in Victoria to pick up the chief biologist of the province, and this guy gets off and he comes through the terminal, and guess what? He looks like this. The poor guy must have thought, well, I'm going to head office. I guess I better dress up. And he did. He got off the plane and he looked like 5,000 other civil servants in Victoria. That's not what we wanted. We wanted the chief biologist of British Columbia. What do you wear to work? Well, corduroys, and corduroys were popular back then, but corduroys, and, you know, I have a check shirt, and I got one of those down vests and stuff. Do you have any of that stuff with you? Yes. Go get changed. Off he goes into the washroom at the Victoria Airport and comes out looking like the chief biologist of the province of British Columbia. Because nobody was going to believe somebody in a suit when it came to talking about wolves and wilderness and culling. And how could you take, this seriously? talking about that kind of subject. And it wasn't that we were trying to trick anybody. I mean, he was the chief biologist. He, you know, he had his doctorate. He was a smart guy. He was a researcher and a scientist and all this stuff. But for television, that was the image. In the same way that, you know, you go into VGH and you interview a doctor, I guarantee there's a stethoscope around that person's neck. Even if they have nothing to do with the stethoscope at that moment, but they're wearing a stethoscope. Because there are certain visual cues that just people react to. And that's what we wanted. So look the part, be respectful, but don't wear or do anything to your clothing or your hair or your makeup or whatever that's going to detract from what it is you're talking about. How do you want to be perceived? Have a look at this. Quick background. 2010, in the province of Alberta, the fellow in charge of the Alberta Health Organization, Alberta had put all of its sort of our version of health authorities under one authority. So they had this massive centralization. There was a problem with emergency rooms, and so the media were dealing with this. And the guy's board of directors were very supportive of him until this incident.
Do you have a response to some of the criticism that MLAs are directing directly at Alberta Health Services?
I'm still eating my cookie.
Okay, well, we'll give you a second. Right, just, yeah.
We've got a meeting to go to. So.
Dr. Becky, can you explain why you won't stop and talk?
I'm eating my cookie.
I mean, well, we can wait. We don't mind waiting. Is there any way that you, just for a minute, just to take a, I think people are interested in hearing from you, sir.
I'm interested in eating my cookie.
Isn't it rather ridiculous that you're talking about eating a cookie when the associate minister is talking about it for you?
We have issued a media advisory which said the media is available to talk in about 30 minutes. Isn't it ridiculous that the media are not prepared to go to the media scrum? And I'm eating my cookie.
But I think people are interested in hearing from you as the head of Alberta Health Services.
Right this way.
So, this guy was probably the highest paid civil servant in all of Alberta. But the arrogance, the absolute arrogance and disdain that he had for those reporters, and through them, the people of Alberta, it cost him his job. Because up until that point, what they were doing in the health authority, his board of directors were supportive. 48 hours later, he was terminated, cost the citizens of Alberta $680,000 in severance, which that didn't go over too well, as you can imagine. But it was all because he just was so disrespectful and so disdainful and so arrogant that they could no longer support him. How could you condone that kind of behavior? That's not how you want to be perceived. So be cautious out there. Watch your words. Watch what you say. And remember, your sense of humor is not my sense of humor. So where you say something and you may just have a flip remark and think, well, I was just joking. On television, that's how it comes across. Complete arrogance. And within 48 hours, Stephen Duckett was gone from the Alberta Health Administration. Totally gone. So that's not how you want to be perceived. So how do I look when I'm on camera here? And we're using television because it's the most intrusive of the media. You want to look natural. You want to find a comfortable position. When you're talking to the reporter, typically there'll be a camera guy and the reporter standing right next to them. Look at the reporter. Have the conversation with the reporter. We're not saying you look directly into the lens of the camera. The only time you would really do that is if it's a live hit. You've seen that where, say, Chris Galis at Global is, or Mike Colleen at CTV, they're talking to somebody who's doing a live hit. When you look at the camera in that situation, that camera becomes the guy on the other end, the woman on the other end, and that's perfectly fine. But normally when you're talking to a reporter with a camera, you're talking to the reporter, not staring into the lens of the camera. The other thing that we ask people to do, a couple of things here. First one is nodding your head. If I look at you long enough in the course of a conversation, you will eventually nod your head. Not because you agree with what I'm saying, that's just you telling me I'm awake and I'm listening. But on television, this means yes. So out of context, this means yes. So try to hold your head still. The other thing is remember that for television at least, the frame is sort of mid-chest up to the top of your head. And this is a problem that men have more than women, by the way. Men start off like this. And the swaying starts to get more and more and more. And pretty soon, the poor camera guy, you're in and out of the frame. Otherwise, he's got to follow you, and that makes everybody seasick. So just, you know, plant yourself and stay firm. And it's a problem men have more than women. And if you, you know, if you still can't get it, push your thigh up against something, a desk, a chair, something that's not going to move, and that'll stop you. In terms of using your hands, in the old days, 30 years ago, we'd say, oh, don't use your hands. Now you can use your hands. Feel free. Feel free to use your hands. But just remember, the camera's from here to here. So if you want to use your hands, bring them up into the frame if you're trying to make a point. If your hands are down here and all I see is your wiggly, that looks odd and perverted. We ask you to be empathetic. And empathetic means that you sort of see things from someone else's perspective. In April 2010, BP exploded an oil rig out in the Gulf, about 40 miles, from Louisiana. 11 people were killed, and over the course of several weeks, 5 million barrels of oil flooded into the Gulf. The president of BP was trying to get the community back on side. But your sincerity has to be real.
Sunday, BP's CEO apologized.
We're sorry. We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused to their lives. And, you know, there's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
Life here may never be the same.
We're trying to clean up this mess.
I'm filled with anxiety every night, and I hope that the BP executives feel the same way. Unfortunately, I doubt that they do.
I'd like my life back. 2 days later, the president of BC went on a sailing cruise in the Mediterranean with his wife and kids. Thousands of people were affected by this in the Gulf Coast. Caused huge disruption, billions of dollars in cleanup and waste and so on, and 11 people were dead. And his biggest concern was, I'd like my life back. So his apology didn't ring true. So when it comes to being sincere, you've got to be sincere, because if you're not, if it's just a fake apology, if it's faux sympathy, people can tell. And it comes back to haunt you over and over and over. We also want you to know when you're doing your interviews to know your limits. There are certain things that you don't do. We don't speculate. I don't care what the question is, we don't speculate. One of the favorite questions from the media for Vancouver International Airport is how many people would die if a 747 crashed and burned on the Arthur Lang Bridge at rush hour? How many? Now, the airport can probably figure out an educated guess, but there's no way they're going there. By their very nature, speculative questions are typically over the top. They're exaggerated. That means the only thing that's going to satisfy that is an over the top answer. So the airport doesn't answer that. Basically, we don't speculate on those kinds of things. What I can tell you about security or safety at the airport is message one, message two, message three. You need to do the same thing. There are lots of media that will come at you with, well, what if? Or what about that? Speculation will take you down a road that you can't get back from. And just as I said, by their very nature, speculative questions are over the top, and so the answer is going to be over the top. It's going to be sexy and animated, and the media will love that, but it's wrong. Never, ever speculate. Stay out of that business. You can't win with a speculative question or answer. How do you bridge? Bridging is the art of taking a question that you're not interested in, and the answer that's important to you. And the reality is, most reporters, when they ask you a question, they're not necessarily looking for a definitive answer to that question per se. What they're looking for is a great clip for their story. And as long as you deliver that, 90% of the time, you're going to be okay. So you've got to learn the art of going from there to there without looking like a jerk, like you've completely ignored the question. So that's a good question, but the most important thing to remember is this. That's a pretty good question, but it's not the only thing that we need to talk about today. For instance, this is really important. And you'll find in that little handout there, I think I put down half a dozen little bridging lines. You can find your own. But all you're doing is sort of throwing a leg at the question in a way and then getting on to the answer that you've come to deliver. Because like Henry Kissinger, you've got a message to deliver on a certain subject. And remember, only the answer shows up in the media, the question doesn't show up. Second, it's not personal. None of these interview things are personal. It's not about you. The media don't care about you. They'll give you a tough time on Monday and walk by you and wave on Tuesday. Because it's not personal. It's not personal. It's just their job. Nothing says guilty like running from a camera or putting your hand up in front of a lens. You know, we've all seen that. And you would think the media would hate that, you know, putting a lens. No, they love it. They love it. You've just given them the top story on the 6 o'clock news. You know, city councilor or mayor shoves cameraman or, you know, bolts into an elevator to try to close the doors or, you know, bars them from entering their office. Those things always make it to the news. Why? Because television is about pictures, and you've just given them million-dollar pictures. They're all great. So it's not about you. Don't lose your temper. It's not personal. Stay calm, because in a lot of cases, they'd like you to overreact. They'd like you to do a Rob Ford and flip out and act badly and so on. But if you don't do that, remember, they can't use it if you don't do it or say it. So here's some sort of bridging lines. You can take a look at them in your own time. This is John Stewart. And I know that there are going to be days when you're a counselor or a mayor and it's just going to be awful and the media are picking on you and your skin is thin and you're just, you're mad as hell and you just want to take it out on the media.
But before we get going, I wanted to talk to you. I don't just obviously anchor the fake news. I also watch much of it as well. And I can occasionally get upset when I watch the news. And there are obviously things, ways to express that. You can write a letter to the editor, call the TV station, go on the show and call a guy a dick. You can do a lot of things. But I was watching my local Fox affiliate, and this was really interesting. Look at how this gentleman took out his frustration with the news media.
A total of 6 on-duty New York police officers called here.
Now, there's that. There's 2 relatively surprising things about this. Okay, number 1, good arm. That's a hell of a dog. That's across the yard. And number 2, the man throwing the chunk of metal was a New York City councilman named Alan Jennings that we'd actually talked to for our show before. Fox was doing a report from in front of his house because Jennings is under investigation for misappropriation of funds and sexual misconduct. And I'm going to guess assault. But, can I just see that one more time?
Police officers called here.
That may be my favorite thing ever.
I want to thank you very much for giving me this opportunity when we normally do media training, as my 2 council friends from Surrey back there will tell you, it's typically half a day. There's a lot more to learn, a lot more to practice on, but these are sort of the highlights. Don't be afraid. Practice, 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 and you'll survive, more than survive, the next 4 years. I've had the chance to work on all kinds of political campaigns, federal, provincial, municipal, and I can tell you, as a taxpayer and as a voter, I know that the work you do in our communities is the work that is closest to me as a voter and a taxpayer. I'm real distant from Ottawa, more distant from Victoria, but my local municipal government is the government that I'm closest to, as someone who lives there, raises a family there, pays taxes there. So I know you're doing great work. You've got 4 great years ahead of you. You will survive the media. If you do some of the things we've talked about today, you'll more than survive. You'll enjoy it. You'll have a good time. And you'll be really well prepared when it comes time to run again in 4 years. So thank you very much for having me. And I know we've got just a couple of minutes left, but if there's any questions, if there's anything that I said that was confusing or anything you'd like to know more about, just give me a holler.
Let's see if I can adjust this.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, it looks like it's on. Excellent. My name is Kirsten Duncan. I'm a counselor with the City of Maple Ridge. And the question I have is how to best address the media, particularly when you're having difficulties with things being properly recorded. So I've had myself misquoted, and I've even had things that I've said that I thought were really positive and I was really excited about attributed to other counselors. And I'm just wondering, what is the best way to speak to the media regarding that without necessarily calling them out or coming off negatively when you just want to make sure you're building a positive relationship?
Sure. Couple of things. There's a big difference between being a reporter and being a commentator. Commentators get to do and say whatever they want. They're commenting. A reporter is supposed to get it straight. Who, what, when, where, and why. They're supposed to get the facts right. When they don't get the facts right, what we ask our clients to do, and sometimes we'll do it on their behalf because we know everybody in the media, but it's not a bad thing for you to do it yourself, get a hold of them and just point out the factual error. Not that I'm pissed off or... don't go into it like that. Just basically, and if you don't think you can control yourself on the phone, write an email, but not an aggressive, agitated email. Just say, interesting story, but... you know, I understand you said that, or you quoted me as saying this. In fact, you know, here's what it was, or here's the number, or it's actually attributed to me, not Councillor Smith or whatever. Just correct it and correct it in writing so that now you've got a bit of a paper trail. If it persists, then it's time to go up to the person's editor. I don't say to our clients, if you're treated badly by a reporter or there's a factual error or whatever, don't jump over their head. Go to the reporter first and work with them to try to correct it. But if it persists, then you have every right to go one step up. And I say that because none of us would like it if somebody had a complaint about us, if they went to my boss. I want you to come to me. I want you to try to fix it with me or give me that opportunity. And that's one of the reasons for the paper trail. But you have, and everybody has, the right to expect that the facts are the facts are the facts. And when the facts are not shown properly or not, you know, delivered properly, then you not only have a right, you have an obligation. Because nowadays, thanks to the internet and everything being digitized, that mistake persists. When someone Googles Maple Ridge, whatever, it pops up. So if you don't correct it, it's still there. And as long as it's there and not corrected, people assume, well, it must be right. So, yeah, by all means, either pick up the phone or send an email. And again, you know, the phone is probably better, or go see them. But if you don't think you can control yourself, you know, you just want to throttle them, write an email, let it sit for a couple of minutes, go back and read it. The whole idea isn't confrontation. It's getting the facts straight and building that relationship. And I always end every one of those emails with, you know, if I can ever help you, you know, do whatever, just let me know. Give me a call if you want more information. I always try to leave it on a positive note. But if it persists, then absolutely go up to the next step, which is the editor, and then last resort is the publisher before you go to the press council, which is different. But that's sort of the pecking order. So try to deal with it first with the individual, and then if you don't get satisfaction, go up the ladder. Great. What a great audience. Thank you very much.
So, Norman, thank you very much on behalf of the LGLA. You've not only delivered practical advice, but you've fulfilled our number one objective, that we like people to leave with enthusiasm and strong message, and you delivered that with such great energy. So thank you very much. So my job's to close the day. It's been a long journey, and I'm sure we're both inspired, but also very, very tired. There are a few quick items I want to cover before, though. Very important to fill out the evaluation forms that are available in the front desk, because that's very important for us to design our programs, and particularly our first forum, which be forum, which after this will be in the early part of 2016. And also, you can recycle your registration tags. That's greatly appreciated. And there are a bunch of people that I'd like to thank. First of all, the hotel and the catering staff for particularly the good refreshments and food. Secondly, the my co-chair, and I'd like to thank her, and Aaron Morrison, who's the program manager of the LGLA. It was fantastic hard work over the last many months. Pamela Lewis, who's responsible for all of the arrangements with the hotel and media liaison. Anna Wijnsinga, who produced your name tags. And MediaCo for supplying the computer and audiovisual materials. So thank you all for participating. It's been the beginning of a journey for you. We hope to see you at future LGLA activities. Be sure to check out on the website our certification program. Just look under details on our website, Earl. And remember that our resources, I think most of the presentations are either on the website or will be on the website shortly. So thank you very much. Have a safe journey. Enjoyed it very much with you all week. Thank you. Thank you.